good friends. Welcome. It is 4 p.m. Central Time, and you're listening to my voice on the great GCN radio network that is either online or through one of the great GCN affiliates out there throughout the country. All that together means it's now time for INN World Report Radio. Good afternoon. My name is Tom Kiley, and I'll be your host here for the rest of the hour. We come to you 5 days a week at this time slot, 4 p.m. Central Time, and welcome to the program. First show for this week, and lots of things started happening over the weekend. Let me tell you first that we're going to be joined in about 15 minutes or so, maybe 5, 10 minutes, with Frida Berrigan, who is a famous peace activist. She works out here of New York City, and we asked Frida to come on and join us because the new military budget just came out, I mean, just like a couple of hours ago. And so we asked Frida, who's a senior program associate at the Arms and Security Initiative, and we're going to speak with her about the military budget. They always study these numbers. They can tell us what's gone up, what's gone down, and, you know, give us some kind of a context, give us some kind of a framework. I can tell you what, right here in New York, right here in New York City, we could use a lot of that money that is going to rebuild other countries around the world after, of course, we pay to destroy them. It's just, I don't know, sometimes I think, friends, that it's just a great social experiment to see how far down we the people can go before we really get fed up. In any case, I'll have open phone lines in this first segment, so give me a call if you'd like, 866-582-9933. Give me a ring, and the first caller who calls in, I'll be happy to send you out a copy of Wayne Madsen's book, Jaded Tasks: Brass Plates, Black Ops, and Big Oil, The Blood Politics of George Bush and Company. But a lot of the information, I would say, predates George Bush and Company, and it is still quite current for today. Very, very interesting material in the book. Wayne's going to be on maybe next week, and we're going to be talking about this book of his. And then he's written another one as well, something about how to be an activist on $5 a day. But give me a ring, and I'll be happy to send you out a copy of that book. So, 866-582-9933, toll free, and you can talk with us here on INN World Report. Lots of interesting things that we're covering, we're following. You know, I don't know if you've seen or not, but it's getting to be quite a big story right now. You know, we talked about last week this this burglary that happened in Senator Mary Landrieu's office in Louisiana. And it turns out that these four young punk operatives that you know, ultra right wing, they ostensibly work for Republican groups, but they remind me of young Karl Rove. You know, when Karl Rove was a young man, he was out there working for the committee to reelect the president, creep, making sure that Richard Nixon did not win fair and square, but that he won hook or by crook, and they were doing all kinds of stuff to disrupt George McGovern's campaign, including like giving people the wrong information about events and so forth, and screwing up flyers and setting off stink bombs. And all sounds like the same kind of thing, but there's a lot more to the story. It turns out that these four young men have had apparently some training in a CIA college program, a recruiting program. So, and one of them actually is credited with, is listed as an operations officer at the Department of Defense's Irregular Warfare Program. So, you know, these kinds of programs train people on how to destabilize governments, presumably around the world, okay? Presumably around the world. And it doesn't make a difference, my friends, whether that government has been democratically elected or not. It doesn't make a difference whether that government is hostile to the United States or not. Okay? It just depends on whether or not, you know, certainly if it's deemed that they're hostile, they go in there as well. But there have been democracies in the world that have been destabilized, overturned, and have had dictatorships put in place by the CIA around the world, not because they were a threat to these United States, but because they had resources that bigwigs, elites in this country wanted to get their hands on, resources that countries were going to use for themselves to sell on the open market in a supposed free market and then take that money and help their own citizens. I got a little more to say about this, but before I do, give me a ring, 866-582-9933. Call me up, and I will be happy to send you out a copy of Wayne Madsen's book, Jaded Task. It's a very, very, very good book, and it talks just about this very subject I'm talking about. But to bring it back to the context, these young guys who apparently have been, you know, being groomed and have been or were being trained in some of these programs, you know, bring them up young, right? My question has always been, how do we know, friends, that if it works in such secrecy, the CIA is not operating on our own democracy, okay, is not operating to destabilize politicians and elected governments right here in these United States? And, you know, that's what you get when you subscribe to the notion that you it's fine to overturn democracies. And it can be done in secret, then how the heck do you know that it's not happening right here? Of course, the CIA is supposed to be precluded from acting within these United States, but we know that's a lot of baloney. They have offices all over this country. I don't know, 50-some offices in major cities around this country. What's that all about? And if you are a regular listener to this program, you also know that we've had author Hank Albarelli Jr. on a couple of times now. He's got a very powerful book out there, friends. If you did not hear Hank's interview, I urge you to get a copy of the book, and we're going to have him back on shortly. But he details a CIA extrajudicial killing right here in these United States. As a matter of fact, right here in this city I'm in, right here in New York City, a couple of miles up the road on 7th Avenue. Right across the street from Madison Square Garden, in fact. So if you are familiar with that part of New York, Midtown Manhattan, right where Macy's is, just, you know, Macy's takes up the whole block. At least, between 6th Avenue and 7th Avenue on 34th Street, well, it's only about a block south of there, where the Statler Hotel is. I think it's now called the Hotel Pennsylvania. But in November 1953, a CIA scientist went flying through a 10th floor window and died on the street below. And Hank Albarelli details in his book, A Terrible Mistake, how that man was killed. Frank Olson was his name. And there are repercussions, friends. Hank uncovers an awful lot of stuff in that book. For instance, it appears that Frank Olson was put to death because he was getting sick and tired of what he was doing, working on secret mind control experimentation programs in the CIA. And he was getting disgusted with it, and he started to talk, and he was considered a security risk. And that's why he was killed. Well, one of those operations that made Frank Olson reconsider what he was doing was one that he was involved in a town in France in August of 1951, Pointe Saint-Esprit, means Bridge of the Holy Spirit, in France in 1951, August of 1951, where he was involved in the dosing of the entire town with LSD. Well, they tried to dose the entire town. I think only half the people drank the water or breathed the air, whichever way they did it, I forget now. But it caused a massive outbreak of instant psychosis in the town. Something like 7 people died. Lots of people went to the hospital, mental hospital. Some never came back out. That's detailed in his book. If you go to Wikipedia and you look up Pointe Saint-Esprit, you'll even see a reference to this madness that is unexplained, they say, madness that broke out in August of 1951. Well, I'm hearing now that his book has been noticed by people in France, and that there are discussions about an inquiry now. So that's the kind of information you get when you listen to INN World Report Radio. Hank Albarelli, that we talked with him about that last year, in fact, when the book first came out. Anyway.
America, you are being tested, but here's where we study for it. From 1/2 mile north of Ground Zero in New York City, you are listening to INN World Report Radio with Tom Kiley. Now, daily on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central. For 9 years, the alternative media activists at INN have produced national daily television news and information programming, top-of-the-hour radio news briefs, and INN World Report Radio. News talk radio that brings you real news the networks won't tell you, and all of it 100% certified neocon-free. To find out more and for details on the stories we are following, go to innworldreport.net.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio. 5 days a week now, Monday through Friday, right here on the great GCN Radio Network, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. And we'll be joined now, I had the time frame just a little bit wrong. Frieda Barragán will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. So in a few more minutes, she'll be here with us. And Frieda is an activist of long standing. In fact, her family goes way back. Her uncles are the Barragán brothers, who were famous from the 1960s, peace activists in the 1960s. This is a dedicated family, friends. They would actually, try to literally beat swords into plowshares. I believe they used to go to military bases and pound on missile tips with hammers. Wow. Anyhow, we certainly don't have that sort of thing going on these days. If you did, I guess they'd throw you in Guantanamo for the rest of your life as a terrorist, something to that effect. But in any case, I was just finishing up telling you about one of the authors that we had on at the end of last year, and it's a great, great book. If you haven't gotten it yet, I urge you, go to trineday.com, T-R-I-N-E-D-A-Y.com, Trineday Publishing, and you can find the book there. It's called A Terrible Mistake by Hank Albarelli, Jr. As a matter of fact, Hank will be here at the INN studios live at the end of this month. We're going to host an event with him down in the main room downstairs. So you can see, you'll be able to see that on YouTube. I'm sure I will be introducing him, so yours truly will be on that clip as well. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that as it gets closer. But in any case, there are lots of stories flowing from the volumes of research that Hank did for his book. And let me just take another pause here. If you want to give me a call, 866-582-9933, I will send you a book. Trineday, the publishing house that publishes Hank Albarelli's book, A Terrible Mistake, the story about the CIA Dr. Frank Olson that was murdered, just has sent me a couple of boxes of books to give to you, and they're sort of supporting the show in that sense. So I'm happy to talk to you about some of the great books that they have there, such as this one, Jaded Tasks. It's by Wayne Madsen, who we expect to have on shortly to talk about it. And it just outlines a whole bunch of covert activity that your tax dollars has paid for around the world. In any case, give me a call, first caller, and I'll be happy to send that book out to you. And you don't have to worry. You can give your private information to my producer after we get done speaking on the air. It's nothing like that. You can just tell him, and he'll text it to me, and I'll get you your book out in the mail. In any case, there are many revelations that came out that are coming out of Hank's book, and one of them is how the CIA dosed this town in France. Well, I'm being told now French authorities are looking into the matter at this point. So stay tuned. I mean, this is something that's long, long overdue. There was a cover story issued at the time that the people were poisoned by ergot poisoning, and which is an ancient problem that has happened, but that not in the modern era. That's a rye grain, I believe, could get a fungus on it, and that's exactly, in fact, I believe, where they discovered LSD from. The Sandoz Chemical Corporation in Switzerland, a drug company, accidentally discovered LSD that way in the 40s, early 40s, and then they synthesized it, I think, by 48. Well, it wasn't long before the intelligence communities of the world took note. The Russians wanted to get their hands on it, and the CIA wanted to get their hands on it as well to use to interrogate people and to brainwash people and that sort of thing. That's what the mind control programs were doing, among other things. They were also using electroshock to wipe people's memories out and so forth, lots of things. And so they wanted to see what would happen if you used it on a whole battlefield of people. Maybe they would drop their weapons and you could maybe win the battle without firing a shot. So they surreptitiously dosed this poor town in France. And they ran this stupid cover story that's been held up for many years. You can see it even today in Wikipedia. If you go to Pointe Saint-Esprit, E-S-P-R-I-T, in Wikipedia, there's not a lot in Wikipedia about the town, but there is a reference to the mysterious ergot poisoning of 1951. Well, it's not so mysterious. That was the cover story put out. So Hank's book, making waves, the French authorities now starting to look into this story. I personally, friends, cannot imagine that our CIA would do this without alerting their buddies in the French security services, but maybe they did and they're trying to cover their butts. Hank says, I just spoke with him on the phone, that maybe they did, but, you know, a lot of these records were burned. The CIA destroyed a lot of the mind control experimentation records because I believe they were so heinous. Alrighty. So, and there's more coming out from that book as well. But let's take a look here. All right, we've got Karen in Oregon. Why don't you join the program? Hi, Karen. Thank you for calling in. How are you today?
Hi, I'm good today. Thank you for taking my call. I actually have something I want to run by you because I work with some people, and we are calling for a national strike in order to protest this government gone wild by totally, peacefully, collectively withdrawing our funds and our support, our economic support from the government for 4 days in a row, April 15th through the 18th. What do you think of that?
I think it's great. I mean, I'd like to know more details, but how do you withdraw your funds from the government? How do you do that?
Well, the only way that we're able to be taken advantage of like this is through our participation and through the involuntary taxes and through every day when we go to work and we go about our business handing our over to a government that we think will take care of us. And obviously that's not going to happen. So by totally stopping the routine as normal, pulling away from jobs, by pulling away from purchasing anything, if around the whole country, and actually I've got people who are contacting me now from Canada, but can you imagine what kind of impact we could have if millions and millions of us withdrew our money from financial institutions that are the larger institutions, the too big to fail institutions, and by stopping whatever jobs that we can, the people who can stay home, just a total peaceful withdrawal to demand the restoration of the Constitution and start some accountability happening. That's basically the idea.
Well, I can tell you a couple of things. First of all, I think you're spot on with moving your money. If you're using one of these big banks, find a good, strong local bank and put your money into it. That's what I'm looking to do right now. As a matter of fact, I was working on that over the weekend, doing some investigation. There's better, smaller banks. There's one right at the end of my block, in fact, that I'm considering, you know, moving my money over to, my wife as well. And I can tell you something else that I thought was a really interesting approach. I don't know if you remember, but the Eastern Bloc countries that came down, Germany, East Germany was the first one. And it was just because the people went out to the streets every day and walked. So that's a Karen, I'm going to ask you to call back tomorrow, and I'll finish this thought with you. Meanwhile, stay on the line and give your information to my producer, and we'll mail you out a book, all right? We got Freda Berrigan coming up right after this.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network. Come on, come on.
All right, good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio, 5 days a week now right here on GCN from 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. Great music, too. It's kind of fitting for the topic, you know, that old stuff, A against B and the winner is C every time. And, you know, as long as we fall for that stuff, red state, blue state, you know, that we're never going to get anything done. So, but good news, more and more people are stepping back from that game and are starting to come together on a lot of different issues, the Constitution, but also on our government out of control, on our military out of control, military spending out of control. And that's why we asked Freda Berrigan to join us this afternoon when the military defense budget was just released, the new budget, just a couple of hours ago by Barack Obama's administration. So I'd like to welcome back to the program right now Freda Berrigan, Senior Program Associate at the Arms and Security Initiative. Welcome back to INN, Freda.
It's good to be back with you, Tom.
Have you had a chance to take a look at this new budget that just came out?
I have, and I have dollar signs in my eyes.
All right. Well, that's why we wanted to have you on. Why don't you let us know the good, the bad, and the ugly?
Well, there's certainly all three in this budget. The good, I guess, is a pay increase for men and women in the military. The bad is just how big it is. We're looking at a $708.3 billion military budget for 2011. And I'll say that again because it's kind of hard to wrap one's head around. $708.3 billion. It's incredible. It's mind-blowing. It's the biggest military budget ever. And there's a lot inside of it. But the real basic, the nutshell is more than $500 billion just for the Pentagon, for the Department of Defense, and then $123 billion in that budget for what the Obama administration calls overseas contingency operations. That's the new term. The new term of art for the global war on terror. So that's funding for Iraq and Afghanistan, for Yemen, for anywhere else the United States sees fit to have military operations. So those two things are kind of combined for that $700+ billion.
You wonder how many World War IIs you can fit into a budget like that.
Yeah, three or four anyway.
One would think, right? And that was with a 500,000, I don't know, how many millions of people do we have in the service at that time? Freda, first question I have is, now I heard Barack Obama was going to do this. Has he in fact done it? You know, the sleight of hand bookkeeping that the Bush administration did by keeping, you know, things like Iraq and Afghanistan off budget as if, you know, it wasn't there. I heard Barack Obama was going to discontinue that practice. A, has he? And if he has, is that part of the increase in the numbers?
Right. Barack Obama promised as a candidate and then early in his term as president to do away with the emergency supplementals that the Bush administration found so convenient as a way of paying for military operations, first in Afghanistan and then in Iraq. And essentially, without most Americans even noticing, the United States taxpayers and our grandchildren and great-grandchildren spent more than $900 billion over the course between 2001 and 2009 on military operations. And Obama promised to do away with that, and he's trying. So as part of the 2010 budget, the budget that we're in right now, there was $129 billion added into the budget, trying to account for military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. He's found it difficult, though. Of course, you remember, and your listeners will remember, that late last year, after the 2010 budget was already pretty much set in stone, the administration decided to surge U.S. forces in Afghanistan, adding another 30,000 troops
to our fighting forces there. And so the costs of that, which are $1 million a person per year, so very expensive, mostly because of getting fuel and supplies positioned in that landlocked country, there needs to be another supplemental, about $33 billion, which will, go through this much quicker process through Congress. And then as we look towards 2011, the administration and the Pentagon have estimated $159 billion for military operations. So a significant increase over what was budgeted for 2010, but trying to head off future supplementals. So that's a part of that $708 billion, and certainly accounts for some of the increase. But if you take the war away, or you take the wars away, we're still looking at base budget to base budget, a 3%, almost a 4% increase over 2010.
So much for the kind of change that you can hope in or believe in. You know, one would think that out of so many different problem areas, that would be one that we could begin to head the other way in. And unfortunately, the way that we're heading is the way that we were headed before.
Right. And this administration has the added problem of really understanding the waste and the redundancy within the military budget. In April of last year, in April of 2009, Defense Secretary Robert Gates sat down with his top generals and announced a really fundamental shift in military spending, and highlighted about a dozen different weapons programs that the administration and the Pentagon wanted to eliminate, get rid of, as a way of starting to rein in defense spending and to really focus on the kind of systems that are relevant to the current wars that the United States is fighting. And that project, which started off so strong in April of last year, has really fallen prey or has been really headed off by the military-industrial complex and this whole nexus of entities that benefit directly from very high defense spending, from contracts in all of these different districts, and from the United States spending billions of dollars on weapon systems that we don't need. So that project has pretty much floundered, although there are some small cuts to particular systems within this military budget. There's a lot, there's still a lot of programs in there that are essentially unnecessary and keep U.S. military spending grossly inflated.
Yeah, and not just this. There's so many other things that started off with great-sounding rhetoric, you know, whether it's closing down Guantanamo or getting to the bottom of torture, you know, bringing those responsible, you know, what have you, all kind of stuff. And, again, just one thing after the other, the talk has been talked, but the walk has not been walked. I think about for instance, the healthcare debate was supposed to be open and transparent and on C-SPAN, right? Yeah, right. Okay. That didn't happen. We know that for sure. Frieda, you know, these numbers and the direction that we continue to go in despite this regime change here in the United States calls to mind, what are people going to do? And we just had a caller, Karen from Oregon, who was suggesting take your money out of the big banks, get them into local banks, and, look at taking some actions and all. She sent me a website I'm going to take a look at. I know that you had an action going on down in Washington, D.C. Sounds like the break's coming up. So when we come back from the break, can we focus a little bit on, you know, what people can do to have an impact against all this?
Sure.
All right. We're talking with Frieda Barrigan. We'll be right back, friends. This is Tom Colley, INN World Report Radio, after this.
America, you are being tested, but here's where we study for it. From 1/2 mile north of Ground Zero in New York City, you are listening to INN World Report Radio with Tom Colley. Now, daily on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central. For 9 years, the alternative media activists at INN have produced national daily television news and information programming, top-of-the-hour radio news briefs, and INN World Report Radio. News talk radio that brings you real news the networks won't tell you, and all of it 100% certified neocon-free. To find out more and for details on the stories we are following, go to innworldreport.net.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio. And we're speaking with Frieda Barragán from a long line, I think, of peace activists in these United States. I think it's great carrying on the tradition. And Frieda, you know, we talked about the defense budget. We talked about how daunting it can seem. Yet at the same time, you point out sometimes very simple things like eating at a lunch counter can start the ball rolling, can be the pebble, perhaps, that begins to dislodge the boulder, which could begin to dislodge the avalanche. You were just doing something down in Washington. Can you tell our listeners about that action that you were involved in?
Sure. Well, I'm part of a group called Witness Against Torture, and for the last number of years, we've been marking January 11th as a date really of national shame. January 11th is the date in 2002 that the first men came to Guantanamo under the Bush administration's war on terror, round people up and label them enemy combatants and put them away outside of the reach of the law, basically, hide them away on some foreign island and torture them and hold them indefinitely. So we've been marking that date every year since then, really, or since learning of Guantanamo. We really thought that, you know, this year we wouldn't have to have a demonstration because last year, right after coming into office, President Obama, 48 hours after taking the oath of office, signed an executive order saying that Guantanamo would be shut down within a year and that torture was going to be ended under his administration. And so we were very hopeful, as was, you know, most people who care about human rights. And so we thought, well, this is great. You know, this is at the top of his agenda, and this is a really decisive way to break with some of the worst of the Bush administration policies. And then we watched in dismay and outrage and really horror as those policies just proved themselves to be very deeply entrenched. And Guantanamo isn't closed despite that executive order and that promise. So many of us came to Washington on January 11th and initiated a 12-day fast, didn't eat for 12 days, and did a daily vigil. We were at Congress, walking through the halls of the Senate office buildings as Guantanamo prisoners. We were at the White House. We were at the Justice Department. We were at the Capitol, just trying to be visible, trying to remind the American people that that this promise has been broken. As you said, like many other sort of policy pronouncements and promises that this administration has made, and sort of drawing attention to the fact that there are still 192 men interred at Guantanamo, and that the proposals from the administration, bringing them to Illinois for indefinite detention, or moving them to Bagram, which is really just even worse than Guantanamo, the U.S. Detention facilities in Afghanistan, that this is not closing Guantanamo, that this is not a decisive break, and in fact a really insidious continuation of Bush administration policies that tarnish our reputation throughout the world and invite our catalyst for violence against the United States.
Recruiters for recruitment posters for Al-Qaeda. And you're right, continuance of an insidious policy by the guy who, why? I don't even know why he bothers to say this stuff. It makes for an even bigger disappointment. He makes it sound like he's a novice and he doesn't know what he's talking about. Pollyanna came to town. I'm going to close Guantanamo and all the other terrible things, And look what happens. Bingo. Can I ask you something, Frieda? Because you've got a lot of experience. We just had a caller on before who was, urging people to do something and take action. I think it's very important. I understand this concept of moving your money to local banks instead of these corporate banks that are too big to fail and so forth. It's an interesting idea. I'd like to run something by you. Back in the protest right after the 2000 election here in New York, there were some young kids that came to some meetings, and they had been in East Germany in college when the East German people rose up and actually began to – they were the first block, if you will, in the Iron Curtain that fell, and it dragged the whole rest of the Iron Curtain down. And it was in the town of Leipzig in East Germany where it was really – where everything really seemed to get started. And there were clergy people involved, and they did not have much room to maneuver. It was a totalitarian state, and what they came up with was they would gather together like one evening a week, I think it was, and they would just walk through the town in a line. And then more people heard about it, more people came, and then it turned into these really long lines of people. And it wasn't really a demonstration. There was no leaders. And this is before social networking and tweeting and so forth. What do you think about something like that?
Well, I think it's a lovely idea, and I think it speaks to something, really deep in our human nature, which is this desire to be connected with other people, this desire to be in relationship with other people, and to be acting together. And I think this little phrase that you said, before social networking, before tweeting, really struck me, because I think, all of this technology is very exciting and pretty amazing and has revolutionized so much of how we communicate with one another. But nothing really replaces this decision to act together and how powerful that is and how transformative that is, not just of yourself, but of society and of politics. And so I think any action that invites us to get out of our living rooms, to turn off the television, to step away from our computer, to put our phones on silent, and be connected to other people, and to be considering how all of these policies, how all of this big stuff that we read about in the newspaper is impacting us personally, impacting our communities, and finding some individual and collective power to do something about it that might not change the world overnight. That's not how social change happens, but it does build, and something that starts with 5 people or 10 people, does snowball, and does have far-reaching consequences. So I think those things are good.
Well, Frieda, you've got a lot more experience than I do, and you're certainly really well-connected with people who know how to do this kind of stuff. Can I deputize you? And if you think that sounds like a worthy idea, can you chew on that and maybe talk it over with your friends and get back to us and let us know when we're going to start doing this here in New York City?
Sure. I'd be happy to do that, Tom.
I think it would be great. And we'll tell everybody on the radio.
Okay.
And I think it's just, it's peaceful, silent, and and if everybody who comes brings another person next week or whatever, and one night a week, and when the weather's starting to get nice now, the springtime's coming, it's a really nice thing. You get out on a nice evening and you just take a walk and figure out a good spot to meet and a good spot to walk to, and we could see what happens. What do you think?
I think that sounds great. The War Resisters League about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, was doing these monthly coffin walks to draw attention to the deaths of U.S. Servicemen and women, and also civilian casualties in Iraq and Afghanistan, carrying these coffins through the streets. And That caught on for a little while, but I think we had too many props, and, mm-hmm. and we were always having to schlep stuff in, yeah. here and there. And so, so this is, you know, it's a simpler idea than that. So I think there's some traction there.
And also, you know, there are so many people and so many issues that we're all disgusted with. It's the war, of course. But the financial bailouts and the money, where it's going, and the lack of torture, the invasion of our privacy, and on, there are so many people across the board now who would be interested in voicing their opinion, even in this simple way.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay, I'll be in touch with you, and you're deputized officially. Okay?
Okay,
we're relying on you.
Okay, sounds good.
Very good. We'll be back in touch. All right, good friends.
Okay.
That was Freda Barragan. And of a long line of peace activists, and maybe we came up with something there. We just deputized her, Frida, working as a senior program associate with Arms and the Arms and Security Initiative. Maybe we came up with something. We'll be circling back with her. Later this week, we've got Scott Horton coming back to talk about that torture at Guantanamo and some other things. All right, good friends, we'll be back tomorrow. This is Tom Kiley.